Okay, let's unpack this. Imagine this really key moment in history, right?
Yeah.
A big church council, supposed to bring everyone together, clear things up. But, well, what if it wasn't quite like that? We're doing a deep dive today into the Council of Chalcedon back in 451 CE. We've got this detailed kind of forensic report, plus the council's own minutes. We want to get at the hidden stuff, our goal. Figure out why this council, aiming for unity, actually ended up causing this huge lasting split.
Yeah.
And why the Oriental Orthodox churches still reject it today.
Yeah, and what's really fascinating, I think, is that Chalcedon wasn't purely about, you know, theological debates. Power and politics were deeply, deeply woven into it, especially as a reaction against the council right before it, Ephesus II. Some even called that one the Robber Council.
The Robber Council. Why that name?
Well, its opponents felt the whole thing was completely unjust, illegitimate. So Chalcedon was partly pushing back against that. And we're using these forensic flags. Think of them as markers to spot, you know, procedural oddities, maybe bias, to see how justice was really working or maybe not working.
Okay, so to see these flags in action, let's zoom right in. Session 14. Seems like a small thing at first, a dispute over who should lead the church in a place called Perahe. But this little case, it blew up some major issues. And our report flagged a few things here. Let's start with forensic flag one, the double standard of justice.
Exactly. This is a big one. We found situations, like with Bishop Athanasius in this Perahe case, he got, well, leniency, even after admitting some pretty serious stuff. See, he'd been deposed in absentia earlier, basically fired without being there because he didn't show up to a previous council when summoned multiple times.
Okay. Deposed in his absence.
Right. But then, get this. Athanasius admitted at Chalcedon that he'd sent, and these are his words, entirely false reports about his opponent to powerful archbishops, said it was because of a guilty conscience.
Wait, he admitted sending false reports, basically slander.
Pretty much admitted slander, yeah. But despite that direct admission, the council gave him a new hearing.
A new hearing. How does that square with, well, wasn't Dioscorus of Alexandria condemned partly for the same thing, for not showing up?
That's the core issue. Dioscorus was a major figure, opposed by many at Chalcedon. And yes, the primary stated reason for his definitive condemnation at session third was his non-appearance after being summoned. Very similar procedural issue.
So one guy admits sending false reports, gets another chance. The other guy doesn't show up, gets condemned definitively. That feels inconsistent.
It's a glaring inconsistency, according to the analysis. You could try to argue nuances, sure, but the report highlights it as a major anomaly in procedural integrity. Mm. It really points towards that double standard. It makes you ask why the difference in treatment, right?
Absolutely. Which leads us neatly into forensic flag two, imperial influence over ecclesiastical decisions. This wasn't just church arguments. Politics were clearly involved.
Oh, definitely. You had Bishop Sabinianus. He was Athanasius' rival for Paralis. He seemed to really play on the council's existing negative view of Dioscorus. And crucially, the final decision in that Perahe case, it was provisional, first of all, and it was delivered by imperial officials, not just the bishops.
Imperial officials are making the call.
Delivering the verdict, yeah. And then the council immediately, like, shouts in unison, nothing could be more just, nothing more exact. That kind of instant unanimous reaction, it does make you wonder if things were maybe a bit prearranged rather than a result of pure deliberation.
Right, like a prescripted outcome. Mm. And you're saying this wasn't just Perry. This pattern showed up elsewhere.
Yes, the report suggests this pattern repeats. A broader sense that theology sometimes took a backseat to politics or what the emperor wanted. Think about figures like Theodore of Cyrus or Ivus of Edessa. They'd been condemned at that earlier robber council. But here at Chalcedon, they were brought back into the fold, rehabilitated.
Without really proving they'd changed their views.
Well, the report argues maybe not rigorously enough. It seemed more tied to their political alignment with the new emperor and the Chalcedonian party.
Okay, so pulling this all together, how does this explain the Oriental Orthodox rejection of Chalcedon? It sounds like more than just a theological disagreement.
For them, yes, it's much deeper. Dioscorus' condemnation, from their perspective, wasn't a fair judgment on heresy. They saw it as politically motivated persecution. So you have these inconsistent rules, you have figures they considered Nestorian being welcomed back, and this heavy imperial hand guiding things.
So the council itself felt compromised.
Exactly. Chalcedon, for them, wasn't this pure moment of clarifying faith. It felt like an event where politics really interfered with justice, and maybe even with theological truth. Even the core definition Chalcedon came up with Christ in two natures. They viewed that with suspicion. Was it pure theology, or was it a political compromise shaped by imperial pressure? That's the question they were asking.
Wow. So this dive really shows how tangled things can get. Faith, power, procedure. They all collide and shape history in massive ways. It's like peeling back layers, isn't it? Seeing the mechanics behind the big pronouncements.
It really is. And it forces us to think, doesn't it? How do you tell the difference between genuine theological development and, well, political expediency? And what does that mean for understanding these historical splits, these disagreements that still echo today? It's a lot to consider.